you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
Second moves in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to be all over the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Western Conference Finals began last night, a riveting battle between the Ducks and the Predators. The Eastern Conference Finals get started later this evening in Pittsburgh as the Senators and the Penguins will do battle. Lots of Winnipeg Jets discussion as well, covering the goaltending situation with the Jets, as that continues to be a topic of conversation among the fan base. We encourage you to join the conversation on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues. The man on my immediate left is Ezra Ginsberg. The man on my far left, wearing a toque, even though it's decently warm outside, is Dave Minuk. And of course, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you both on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, what's going on, Drew? You always know it's going to be a good weekend when you go to Tim Hortons before the show. You pick up your coffee. I always get Timbits for the crew, and they give you an extra sausage English muffin. I got two today for the price of one.
And he consumed them both.
Yes, he did definitely eat them both. I mean, he gave a cursory offering of it to both Dave and I in case we wanted it, but I really didn't get the impression that, your heart and your passion was into that offer. I just sort of thought you were going about the motions and, hey, you guys want this?
Well, because, he offered it to, in his defense, he also offered it to Rory.
Oh, that's true. He did offer it to all three of us, but I mean, I didn't want to take food out of his mouth. You know,
and he knew I wouldn't eat it, so.
Yeah.
I did offer it to Rory, but Rory actually already had a wrap and a bagel belt.
Yeah, so Rory was well taken care of. So basically what you're saying is between you and Rory, the two of you have eaten enough food for four people so far.
Yeah, I don't
know
if Rory and I skipped dinner last night or what it is, but both of us came into the show today with a huge appetite, but love it, Drew. I love getting free food. You know that.
I do know that. How about a huge appetite for some hockey talk? Because that's what we're going to bring you here on this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We start with the Western Conference Finals. That, of course, got underway last night in Anaheim. The Predators and the Ducks, not a what I would describe as a traditional battle in terms of the Western Conference Finals, but that was a hell of a hockey game last night between those two teams that have had a lot of success so far in the playoffs. I would say the Predators have probably been one of the, if not the best team in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far this April and May, then certainly one of the top two teams. And that was a very entertaining hockey game last night, even for the casual hockey fan who might not have a rooting interest.
Andrew, you mentioned that it's not a traditional Western Conference final, but you have Anaheim, who was in the final a couple years ago against Chicago, and these two teams have played, this is the third time that they've played, and Nashville has won both of the series, right?
Including last year's in round one, the Predators won in seven games.
That's right. So you have that factor, that revenge factor, I should say, in the series, right? But certainly, I mean, this is Nashville's first time in the Western Conference Final. They're trying to get to their first Stanley Cup Final. And then you have the Anaheim Ducks with this group who want to go back to the Stanley Cup Final and go all the way. You know that they're not just happy to be there. Whereas Nashville, this is their first time there. And, you know, the expectations, I would say, are higher for this Anaheim Ducks group and Randy Carlyle. And, you know, Anaheim had less than 48 hours to prepare for this game. And I thought it really showed in the first period. At one point, the shots were 13-1 for the Nashville Predators. Mm-hmm. And I thought the first period was just absolutely controlled by the Predators. And the Ducks were turning over the puck a lot. And I thought the Ducks were lucky to leave that first period with a 1-1 tie. So give John Gibson a lot of credit. He played really well, but also give Pekka Rinne a lot of credit. And I think that's really been the storyline for this Predators team. And I think you're going to hear a lot more about how good of a coach Peter Laviolette is. And we know that Peter Laviolette's gone all the way before with the Carolina Hurricanes. And I thought he did a very good job with the Philadelphia Flyers when he was there as well. But Pekka Rinne continues to be the story. And I would say that John Gibson was probably as good as Pekka Rinne in that game, if not better. Certainly wasn't one of the games that Pekka Rinne had to steal, but he was very solid, especially in that second period. Mm-hmm. Made a really good save on Ryan Getzlaff. Ryan Getzlaff just had to get that puck up a little bit higher, and he would have scored there. But, I mean, the Ducks continue to get goals from a variety of sources. They now have 15 different goal scorers in the playoffs, Drew. And Philip Forsberg gets the first goal for the Predators. He actually wasn't that good in the second round. He only had a goal and an assist. So, I mean, the top line needed to get going. And to me, Dave, that's been the key matchup. That will be the key matchup, I should say, in the series. Ryan Johansson up against Ryan Kessler. And Ryan Johansson, you know, there are some similarities in his game between him and Getzlaff, but I thought he really stepped up in game one.
I thought Getzlaff was phenomenal yesterday. Like, he was really engaged, and you could just see him just like getting under guys' skins. He was trying to get the big hits. He crushed, I think it was Arvidsson into the boards, although Arvidsson kind of twisted, so it left him a little bit vulnerable. I just thought you could see it. He was smirking. He was laughing. He was just trying to get his group going, because you could see, as you said, that Anaheim just didn't have the same start that Nashville did. And, you know, the one thing about Nashville that you forget about is just how talented this group is. When you see the names and just the firepower that this group has from both the forward group and the defense, it's unbelievable. And then, of course, you have all-star goaltending in Pekka Rinne. Like, he was phenomenal. He's been phenomenal, and he was very good yesterday. But I just thought Nashville played such a good game. And, you know, obviously Anaheim tied it, and it went to OT. But I thought Nashville was the better team overall, and I just liked the way they played.
And Matthias Ekholm was phenomenal in that game, I thought. And not just on the overtime winning goal, but all throughout, paired up with PK Subban. And on that goal, he breezes by Corey Perry, and it kind of throws the Ducks defense into disarray, right? And the goal ends up actually going off of Corey Perry. Yeah. Ryan Johansson makes a great cross-ice pass to James Neal. But, I mean, this Predators team, I agree, Dave, it's a talented group. And, you know, when you look at maybe up the middle, the Ducks have the advantage with Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kessler. But Ryan Johansson is a bona fide number one center. And even though he wasn't that good in the second round, he was very good in the first round sweep against Chicago. And this team
didn't have a great regular season either. I mean, Johansson had a bit of a down year compared to his season last year for the Predators, but he's got 9 assists so far in the playoffs, 11 points for the Predators. So I think he is picking up his game when he's needed it the most for the Preds thus far in the playoffs.
And you can just get the feeling, I should say, that this series is going to be an absolute war, mm-hmm. right? And we know that Anaheim is one of the heaviest teams in the league, and Nashville can mix it up as well, and especially when you add guys like Vernon Fiddler, and they've added Cody McLeod as well to the lineup. These guys can play that style of game, and you really see the depth that this team has. And I would say that the Anaheim Ducks, top to bottom, are a better team. I'd give the advantage to the Predators on defense, but the Ducks have a pretty darn good defense as well. But, you know, that third line of Colin Wilson, Colton Sissons, and James Neal, I mean, that's a second line on many teams, right? Mm-hmm. So the Predators are getting balanced scoring, and Dave talked about it. It's like, in this year's playoffs, it's like we didn't already know that they had the best defense in the league. And that's why they were able to trade a Seth Jones. I mean, this group of defensemen is second to none, in my opinion. It used to be you talk about the Rangers and the Blues as having the best defense. But I think it's pretty clear that this group moves the puck probably better than any other group in the league.
You know what I found interesting about the game one last night? We're discussing the Ducks and the Predators game one, of course, won by the Predators 3-2 in overtime. What I found interesting about last night's game is that usually when you have two teams playing each other that aren't traditional rivals, they don't really, I mean, they haven't met since before New Year's prior to last night's game. They played three times in the regular season. They all happened earlier in the year. It takes a little bit of time for that hate to develop. I thought right from the outset last night, there was physicality, there was dislike. I don't know if there were lingering resentment from last year's playoffs, but right from the outset, and you sort of spoke to it, Dave, when you mentioned Ryan Getzlaff and how engaged he was into that game physically, this was after every whistle, there was a bit of a face wash, and after every whistle, there was an extra little poke. It did not take a game or two games for the physical side, for the chippy side, for the hate, quote unquote, to develop between these two teams.
Well, it's the Western Conference Final, right? If you're the Anaheim Ducks, you're looking at the Nashville Predators, and this is the team that knocked you out in the first round last year. You know that they are your obstacle to getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. So I don't think there is lingering resentment. I mean, they know that they were defeated by the Predators last year, right? Mm-hmm. So they know that this is the team they're going to have to beat to get there. So, but you're right, Drew. I mean, that quickly developed in the game. There was a lot of physicality and a lot of nastiness, and we know that guys like Corey Perry and Ryan Kessler aren't afraid to get in the faces of the opposition. But hey, look, the Predators have guys that are willing to mix it up. I've been really impressed with Austin Watson, mm-hmm. and I realized that was his first goal of the playoffs, but he's got a lot of speed, and I also have really liked Cali Yarncroak throughout the playoffs. I mean, this Predators team, and you forget that they were the favorite going into this series. I mean, many of the experts were predicting the Predators to win the series, even though the Ducks won the Pacific Division, right? So in a sense, even though the Ducks have home ice advantage or did have home ice advantage, it's really the Predators that have a lot of the momentum, Dave.
Yeah, and you know what? Speaking to the physicality, as because, you know, Anaheim is a big, big team. So, and they've got the players like, you know, the Ryan Getzlaff, who's a captain, can score, but he can also bang. But you saw after the hit Getzlaff laid out, mm-hmm. Cody McLeod was chirping, and he was talking across the bench. And you know, like, that's the whole point. Like, this Nashville team doesn't back down. They have tons of skill. And a guy like Austin Watson, I mean, sure, that, like, as he said, that was his first goal, but he was in the right spot. And sure, it may have gone in off Sammy Vatanen's the back of his head or the side, or maybe it was his shoulder. It was an unusual. Gibson really didn't have much of a chance because it wasn't like it beat him. Mm-hmm. It hit it when it deflected in off his defenseman. But still, like, you know, I just look at this Nashville team and I think to myself, like, how did this team finish so poorly? Like, you know, relatively speaking, in terms of where they finished in the division.
Why were they a wild card team as opposed to a top three
team? It's crazy when you're looking at, and maybe sometimes when we've talked about it being a little bit of a late bloomer, isn't necessarily such a bad thing. But, like, it's amazing to me that this wasn't one of the top teams in the Central, because they're just so talented. And then, I mean, we haven't think about it. We've talked this whole thing. Who set up James Neal for that goal? It was P.K. Subban. We haven't really talked about P.K. Subban and his gameplay throughout yesterday. And he was phenomenal.
Sure.
And Roman Josi was amazing. And Matthias Ekholm was phenomenal. So you have these guys who, like, are getting the puck up. And we're not even, like, are distributing it so beautifully. And one person we haven't even talked about, who I think is as effective at passing the puck up to his forwards or his defense as anybody, is Pekka Rinne. I mean, his play with the puck behind the net is, I mean, you see, we saw it in the last series with, you know, like some of the goalies who, you know, if they get the puck, it's like a hot potato back there. And then you've got a guy like Pekka Rinne who can get the puck on him. He's vocal. He gets the puck to the defenseman, and he allows him. He really gives him an advantage in terms of his break in the team breakout. So, that Nashville team really just continues to impress. And perhaps it's because the series they've played in haven't really captured the imagination that people aren't really paying attention to Nashville as. But I think now, really, you've got a bit of a captivated audience because there really are only two series left. Mm-hmm. And people are just kind of paying attention and going, wow, how good is this Nashville team?
And I think in Game 2, you're going to get a better start for the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah.
And maybe that was part of, you know, getting your emotions in check, coming off of the high of beating the Edmonton Oilers in seven games. But really, that first period sets the tone for the rest of the game, right? And I thought Nashville carried that through into the second period, even though the Ducks were better in the second period. But hey, the game could have been over in the third period when they had a 5-on-3. And give John Gibson a lot of credit. You know, he stood tall for the Ducks.
Yeah, two straight puck over the glass penalties, delay of game penalties by the Ducks led to an extended 5-on-3. There's only about, 6 minutes left in the game when that happened? And so the Ducks had the Predators had a 5-on-3 for upwards of 90 seconds.
And, you know, I don't think you should expect this series to be anything but a long series, mm-hmm. and a close series. And, you know, again, you maybe give the Predators the advantage in goal and on defense, but the Ducks certainly have the advantage when you're talking about their forward group with guys like Ryan Getzlaff and Jakob Silverberg, and Rickard Rakell has been excellent. And, you know, hopefully they get Patrick Eves back here, but I think this one is most likely going to go the distance.
I do agree with you. I think this is going to be a lengthy series. These two teams seem so evenly matched. And, you know, to your point, Ezzy, about Anaheim and their slow start, aside from Getzlaff and Silverberg, I thought that the Ducks forwards were average at best last night. And even playing an average game, they were still able to get it to overtime when it's, you know, really a toss-up at that point in time. So you have to figure that a Ducks team, you know, when they come back for Game 2 tomorrow night, they'll be better. I think the rest of their forward group will be better. A guy like Corey Perry, I thought, had a really off night last night. Obviously, the game-winning goal goes in off of him. That's just bad luck. But I thought just in general, he wasn't as effective as you're used to seeing Corey Perry in the course of a playoff game. So I'd expect to see the rest of the Ducks forwards, aside from Getzlaff and Silverberg, to really have a bounce back game in game two.
Well, Corey Perry was awful in the first round, and he was awful early in the second round against Edmonton. It was later on in the series that Corey Perry started to really find his game, right? And he has to be good if the Ducks are going to go all the way. When you have a guy like Corey Perry, a former 50-goal scorer on your team, you need him contributing. He doesn't necessarily have to score every game, Drew, but he's back up on the top line with Getzlaff and Raquel. He was on the third line.
Because of the Eves injury. That's the reason why they've had to juggle the lines around.
Right. So, I mean, he's getting that opportunity to play big-time minutes up there on the top line, right? And Cogliano, Kessler, Silverberg, I mean, is this not the most consistent line in all of hockey? I mean, year after year, these guys just produce. And I thought they were the best line. And Ryan Johansson's line is going to see a lot of the Kessler line. So it's going to be a great series. I think, you know, the Ducks-Oilers series was arguably the best series of the first round. Maybe you throw in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The Capitals and Leafs series was probably the best series of the first round. But this one's going to be a war.
Predictions before we have to come back and talk about the Senators and the Penguins. Who's going to win at how many games?
Yeah, it's tough to make a prediction after you've already seen a game, but
you get a little more education. You get a freebie out of it. You're not going in blind for once.
I'll say Predators in six.
I will echo his sentiment, and I think Predators in six as well.
And I'm going to be the contrarian. I think the Ducks pull it off in seven. We shall see. When we come back, the Eastern Conference Final starts tonight. Ottawa at Pittsburgh. We preview that series next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The Ottawa Senators will face the Penguins for a fifth time in the postseason, the most Ottawa has faced any one opponent.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The Sens and the Penguins. I don't think anybody called that as their Eastern Conference Final prior to the playoffs starting, but that gets underway later on tonight back in Pittsburgh as the Penguins will look to return to the Stanley Cup Finals for a second consecutive year, and the upstart Senators will look to play spoiler in that series. Can anybody stop the Penguins at this point in time, guys? I mean, what do the Ottawa Senators, who are the decided underdog in this series, what do they need to do? What needs to happen for them to be able to neutralize this Pittsburgh Penguins team that, having gone through the Washington Capitals, certainly in my books would be the Stanley Cup favorite right now?
Yeah, and you know, you look at where the Ottawa Senators have been in the past and where they are now, and they knocked off a good team in the New York Rangers. And I mean, it's pretty obvious, Drew, that the Ottawa Senators are an underdog in this series, and it's really going to be Ottawa's defensive structure against Pittsburgh's offense. And the Rangers are a very fast team. They're a top three speed team, if not a top five speed team in the league, right? And you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins right now, I mean, they didn't play that great in the second round against the Washington Capitals,
no.
Right? And you know, you look at Ottawa Senators right now, and they've really been scoring by committee. And, you know, they have the advantage in that they have the best defenseman in the world right now. And, you know, you look at Pittsburgh, and everybody's going to talk about slowing Pittsburgh down, but Pittsburgh has to slow Erik Karlsson down, right? So, I mean, I think that's as big of a storyline in this series as slowing Pittsburgh's forwards down. So, you know, I still think Pittsburgh is going to end up winning this series. And, you know, Ottawa, I'm not going to say that Ottawa isn't going to win a couple of games in this series, but certainly, I mean, you've got to shut down the Crosby line. You've got to shut down the Malkin line. Malkin has more points than anyone else in the playoffs, but it's not just one or two players, right? Then you look at the third line, and you're going to have to shut down a guy like Nick Bonino, who's been very good in the playoffs, and Brian Rust has been very good in the playoffs. So the Pittsburgh Penguins have three good scoring lines, so it's not like you can just shut down one line and then you're good, right? So it's going to be very difficult. Craig Anderson's most likely going to have to steal two or three games if the Senators have a chance.
I would echo that sentiment. I think the only way that Ottawa has any chance, with all due respect to the forward or the defenseman, it's all Craig Anderson. If Craig Anderson can stand on his head and win the series, which is entirely possible. I mean, we've seen it before where goaltenders will be able to be the best player on their team and you know, get their team into a pass through it, you know, through a juggernaut like a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins. But that's what it's going to take. And it's going to take a Herculean effort, really, because that's how good this Pittsburgh team is. And, you know, they've got to be feeling a ton of confidence, despite the fact that they blew their, you know, series lead against Washington and had to beat them in Game 7. This is a Pittsburgh team that's probably feeling pretty good about themselves. And, you know, the fact is that many of the pundits who were watching these series said that was either your conference finals when Pittsburgh took on Washington, or is even the Stanley Cup finals. And a lot of people are kind of anointing the Penguins as repeat champions now after only two rounds of NHL playoffs. So I think it may be a little bit early for that. And while the Senators, from the articles I've read, have said they will not embrace the underdog role, it's clear that they are the underdog, despite the fact that they have Erik Karlsson, who, from my understanding, went on the ice yesterday for practice and left fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his foot still causing him a little bit of an issue. But fact is, like as he talked about how good Erik Karlsson has been, I mean, the fact that he is injured and he's playing as well as he is impressive. You wonder if, you know, they've had a decent break. Hopefully, he's
longer than
a little
the Penguins
bit.
Have.
Right, longer than the Penguins. But I mean, you know, for what he's dealing with, I don't know how sufficient that is for yeah. you know. For full recovery, obviously. But again, clearly whatever percentage you want to peg Erik Karlsson at, he's still playing at a next level.
And if you're the Ottawa Senators, Dave, you want to keep these games low scoring. You want to leave it to a turnover. You want to, you know, hope that you're able to win a few games like that. But the Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, Even without Chris Letang, I mean, this team is still the best team, I believe. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what Guy Boucher does matchup-wise against the Pittsburgh Penguins, because Malkin, Kessel, and Rust has been the best line. And I realize Jake Guentzel has the most goals for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but it's going to be interesting to see who Guy Boucher puts up against that line. Wouldn't be surprised if it's the Derek Brassard line. And Mathot and Karlsson are going to see a lot of the Malkin line, I would imagine. So, I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins are a better team, but that doesn't mean that the Ottawa Senators don't have a chance in this series, but I don't think they're going to win.
Matt Murray, who was the backup for Marc-Andre Fleury in Game 7, that obviously tells you that he's healthy enough to play. How long of a leash do you think Marc-Andre Fleury has? Is this a couple bad goals and you're going to see Matt Murray retake what was his starting goaltender's net?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury was sensational in the first two rounds. Why would he have a short leash?
Because he is ostensibly, quote-unquote, the backup goalie. Now, he's a fantastic backup goalie, but do you think Marc-Andre Fleury gets to take this ball and run for it for the, you know, entirety of the series?
Of course. He's played all the games. I mean, if Marc-Andre Fleury has a bad game, Drew, Matt Murray could come in for Marc-Andre Fleury, but that applies to any goaltender.
Right. No, but you don't think that if there's, you know, repeated struggles.
If Craig Anderson struggles, is he going to be pulled?
Well, Craig Anderson is always the starting, you know, is the number one goaltender in Ottawa. The difference is Marc-Andre Fleury, while probably, you know, the best, quote-unquote, number two goaltender, he is the number two. Matt Murray was the starting goaltender in Pittsburgh all season long.
Those are just titles. Those are labels. Doesn't matter at this point. Marc-Andre Fleury has been playing the games for Pittsburgh. So whoever was the number one goalie during the regular season means nothing.
So I think to answer your question, he could get pulled if, let's say, it's a, you know, game one or game two, and it's 3-0 Ottawa, and he's not playing well, then you could see him getting pulled. But I don't think that they're not going to go back to Marc-Andre Fleury the next game, because as he rightly said, he's the guy who's gotten you there, and he's the guy who's won you the games, and he's played very well for the most part throughout these playoffs. So I think, regardless of whether it's a title of you're the one and you're the two, the fact is that Marc-Andre Fleury has been the guy. Now, of course, if it's two or three, you know, you lose two games in a row, maybe at the end, and it's, you can put it on goaltending, then maybe we're having a different conversation. But as of right now, a bad goal or two, I don't think that's on. I don't think it's going to give him any sort of short leash.
And in the Anaheim-Edmonton series, Jonathan Bernier came in for John Gibson, and Jonathan Bernier also came in for John Gibson in the first round. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, goalies can be pulled, but I don't think if Marc-Andre Fleury struggles in game one or two, that necessarily means that Matt Murray is going to take over for him in the series. I think he'd have to have a couple of bad games in a row.
Any lingering resentment from Mark Mathot, you know, the Sidney Crosby slash that cost him a portion of his finger, a portion of his thumb, whatever it was back during the regular season. You think that that's still in the minds of the Senators as they get into this playoff series?
I don't know necessarily, Drew, that it's in the minds of the Senators as much as it's in the mind of Mark Methot. And, you know, you're going to have Mark Methot possibly going up against the Sidney Crosby line, right? So he's usually paired up with Erik Karlsson, so they're going to have a lot of ice time out there. And that's a storyline for the series, absolutely, in addition to the fact that the Ottawa Senators are a huge underdog. Plus, you know, there's the entire storyline with Craig Anderson and his wife, and, you know, Bobby Ryan's had a rough year off the ice as well. And, I mean, I think it's a great story. And, hey, look, maybe the Ottawa Senators shock us all, because certainly this year has been the year of the upset, right, with Nashville beating Chicago in four games. We didn't expect that. So Ottawa still has a chance in the series. They're a very good team, and I thought Guy Boucher outcoached Alain Vigneault in the second round. So they certainly have a chance in the series, but I mean, this is the Pittsburgh Penguins we're talking about, defending Stanley Cup champions. You've got to shut down Crosby. You've got to shut down Malkin, and you've got to shut down a lot of other players in addition to that. But, I mean, look at Mark Methot, you got to think that that's extra motivation for him, right?
Sure, you would think that you know, you take a number, as they say, and remember number 87, in this case being Sidney Crosby, and how his slash came down and busted up your finger pretty well. The Senators had so much problems with the Rangers' speed in the second round. I mean, and that was really the turning point in sort of the, you know, in the middle of the series, and then the Senators were able to overcome that. The Penguins are probably faster than the Rangers, which is hard to believe. They're probably the fastest team in the NHL. Is that going to be the difference in this series, to your mind? I mean, sure, the Penguins are more skilled than the Senators, but is that speed really going to be too much for the Senators to overcome, I think, in the course of this Eastern Conference Final?
Andrew, it's not just the forwards, too. When you think about the New York Rangers, and Jan Girardi was not good in that series. Nick Holden struggled as well. This is a much more mobile defense than the New York Rangers. And I realize a guy like Ryan McDonough had a really good series, and Brady Shea was really good, but you're talking about Justin Schultz and Ollie Matta, and hopefully Trevor Daly is healthy. So it's a much quicker team, but the Rangers are a quick team, but also it's just, you're talking about a skill level that's much higher on the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? I mean, like guys like Hornqvist and Bonino, that's your third line, right? Like, it's incredible what the Pittsburgh Penguins are able to put out there, right? So, I mean, it's going to be a factor, absolutely. But, you know, there was only one team, aside from the Ottawa Senators, in the last 20 games that allowed fewer goals, and that was the St. Louis Blues. So the Senators are an excellent defensive team, and it goes back to what we were saying before, Dave. They want to keep this series low scoring. They don't want these games to open up and really let these Pittsburgh players do what they do best, right, which is create scoring chances off of the rush. So it's going to be tough, but you know, Guy Boucher, that's what he's thinking about right now. How do I slow these guys down in the neutral zone?
And that's the key. And the Rangers are probably one of the fastest teams. Pittsburgh's probably just one level maybe above that, but you're probably talking about two of the faster teams in the NHL. Ottawa was able to neutralize them. I mean, obviously they had some problems against the Rangers, but that's exactly what they're going to have to do. They're going to take it to the next level, which is what you would expect from a team as they're trying to advance the Stanley Cup Finals. And they'll neutralize the neutral zone, as they've been doing pretty much all year long.
Quickly, predictions on the series before we bring in Bill West from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
I'll take Pittsburgh in six.
I really want to take the Senators in seven, but I'm also going to go Pittsburgh in six.
That's unanimous. I also have the Penguins in six. Up next, Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review will preview game one of the Senators-Penguins and talk about the series in general. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. The man on my left is Ezra Ginsberg. The man on my far left is Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Bill West. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, the Senators and the Penguins, game one of the Eastern Conference Final later on this evening. Bill, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well, Bill. I appreciate your time this morning. Before we look ahead to the game one tonight, I want to take you back to Wednesday night and the game seven between the Capitals and the Penguins. The Capitals had battled back from that 3-1 series deficit. They take it to game seven on home ice. The Penguins appear to be reeling in that they really, I don't know how many of those games in that series they were actually the better of the two teams. Except for game seven, they were able to, is it just something that this Penguins team has, their ability to sort of dig deep when it matters most and produce their best effort of the series in that game seven?
I think it's something the team's had for much of the year, and it just happened to work out really well in terms of timing. You know, the one word that Mike Sullivan uses a lot, and I think it's appropriate, is resilience. And I know it's a word that other coaches use too. It's probably common coach parlance, but I really believe it with the Penguins. I think their leadership, and certainly since Mike Sullivan has taken over, they're just a group that is very certain of the way they want to play and how well they can do. When they're again, their best guys are on or close to it. So I think in game seven, especially in the third period, that's what we saw. It was just kind of, everyone rising to the occasion. And, the Caps, which I picked them to win the series, and I picked them to make the Stanley Cup final at the start of the playoffs, they just didn't really have an answer.
Bill, do you think that the Sidney Crosby slash on Mark Methot is going to be a storyline at all in this series?
I think for maybe tonight and probably by the end of the game, there will be new storylines. The nature of the playoffs, it's amazing to think how quickly Sidney Crosby's concussion, the hit that he got from Matt Niskanen and then the fallout of that went very quickly. And then suddenly it was just kind of a footnote in the series. So I think, there might be a little confrontation and I'm sure there will be talk about it in the media, but something else will come up. Some questionable hit or questionable call, and that'll be the new obsession.
Bill, Ottawa's going to roll out that 1-3-1 against the Penguins, trying to slow them down. How are the Stanley Cup champions getting creative to try and avoid being bogged down in the neutral zone?
Well, at practice, they're using a scout team, which is not something you see very often in hockey. They had some of their Black Aces and just a couple guys that have been either healthy scratches or kind of in and out of the lineup. Essentially replicate the 1-3-1 at practice on Friday. And I think they're just trying to get a feel for it. Obviously, some backups aren't going to replicate what the Ottawa team has done very well down the stretch. But it's probably just a good mental exercise for them, if nothing else, and driving home the point that they need to be very patient and really simplify their strategy. The Ottawa in three games in the regular season, or certainly the last two, I thought Ottawa did a very good job of containing the Penguins' speed and really making it more of a kind of counterattack based game. So I think the Penguins need to be smart with the puck. They certainly should be taking Ottawa seriously at this point, because Ottawa has taken out a very good puck possession team in Boston, a very fast and good counterattack team in New York. So, a lot of what the Penguins do or want to do are things that Ottawa has already overcome.
Bill West is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bill is with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He covers the Penguins. The Penguins and the Senators game one goes tonight in Pittsburgh. Bill, it's a lot easier said than done, but obviously the key for the Penguins, or one of the keys for the Penguins, is to neutralize Erik Karlsson as much as possible. What sort of strategy do you think the Penguins are going to deploy to try and keep Karlsson in check for the majority of the season? Series, pardon me.
This is a good question. I'm sure a lot of the teams around the league would like to have some sort of solution or answer there. I don't know if they'll treat him any differently than they'll probably treat most of the defensemen. They're going to try to roll the lines and roll deep pairs. Certainly when Karlsson's on the ice, they're going to have to be aware of his passing ability and how he can create in transition versus the other guys. But at the end of the day, they want to get pucks behind Karlsson. They want to make him use all of his energy retrieving pucks and starting breakouts, as opposed to being more of a playmaker up ice. So if they can do things that just allow them to be on the offensive and not let Carlson dictate play out there. That's going to be a game changer.
Bill, what's Trevor Daly's health status?
He is still day-to-day. He still has a lower body injury. He didn't practice yesterday. I would not expect to see him in the lineup tonight. I think it could be some sort of nagging thing. And the other reality is I'm not sure the Penguins need him. If he's healthy, they'll certainly consider him, get him back in the lineup. But I think he's had kind of an up-and-down year, and Chad Ruedel has proven effective when he's put in the lineup. He's by no means a game-changer, but they can trust him to do what he has to do as a third-pair guy. Chad Ruedel is also right-handed. The Penguins have an abundance of left-handed defensemen, and at times I think it's been problematic for them just in terms of running breakouts and things in their own ends. So I'm not sure they're particularly hesitant to use Ruedel over a marginally healthy Trevor Daly.
You know, Bill, oftentimes teams love to seize the label of underdog, but why do you think it's important for the Penguins to take that favorite role and run with it?
Well, I think it's more so a case of they just have to do it because there's no way they can resist it. In the Washington series, even a little bit in Columbus, they were always quick to point out that the other team was very good and had a close record. Washington obviously was a President's Trophy winner, so the Penguins were able to deflect even as the defending Stanley Cup champion, just because they had injuries, because of the way the regular season played out. But now, there's no way to hide or try to spin the narrative. They're going to face questions every day, especially if things don't go great against Ottawa about, why aren't you guys controlling play? Why aren't you dominating? Why isn't this series, why hasn't it been easy? You just beat the best team in the league. And, I think the resilience and kind of composure of the Penguins is a key attribute for them. But it's probably going to be tested if things don't go well. Because, again, the Canadian media, as I'm sure you guys know, is even more eager to kind of, put pressure on Sidney Crosby and some of those stars and say, hey, you're supposed to, fulfill your destiny. So I think for the Penguins, as patient as they'll have to be on the ice, they'll have to be a little patient off the ice, too, about just facing extra noise, as they always call it.
Bill West, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Penguins and the Senators. Game one of that series goes tonight in Pittsburgh. Bill, what does the return of Matt Murray, he obviously was the backup for Game 7, what does the return of him to obviously healthy status mean for this Penguins team? Presumably Marc-Andre Fleury will be the man until he's not, but having Murray there as sort of that safety net, what does that mean to the team?
Well, for now it means they have they're back to their kind of number one starter, a pair of number one starters, I should say. They can stop theoretically relying on Tristan Jarry as the backup. And Marc-Andre Fleury still enters the series as the starter. He's still the guy. He hasn't done anything in the playoffs to bring that role into question. If anything, he's gone above and beyond what they've asked. I do think the plot might thicken a little bit if we see a bad performance or two out of Marc-Andre Fleury. Then you could start to hear a little bit of clamoring for Matt Murray. Matt Murray is going to say the right things in the meantime. I think he's going to try to follow the lead that Marc-Andre Fleury has set a year ago in terms of being the supportive backup. But I think Matt Murray is also a young, confident guy. So he's maybe patiently waiting for his chance to step in, even if it is kind of, again, the draw from last year. Maybe he gets one game to kind of prove himself. Marc-Andre Fleury got one game. Of course, it didn't go great, so they went back to Matt Murray. But I think Matt Murray, he's not going to root against the Penguins and Marc-Andre Fleury. I also think that he wouldn't mind getting a start or two just to kind of change the conversation a little bit.
Bill, we know that Chris Letang is not coming back during these playoffs, and Trevor Daly isn't going to play in Game 1 tonight. And when you think about the Penguins' defense, you obviously start off with guys like Justin Schultz and Ollie Matta, but Ron Hainsey was playing 20-plus minutes a night in the Capitals series, and he's still looking for his first Stanley Cup at 36 years old. How great is that trade deadline acquisition looking now for the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I think it's worked out well. There's times, and really this is true of almost all the defensemen, like you pointed out. Chris Letang was their definite number one and the only guy that could be trusted to do major minutes and to handle the toughest matches every night. So they've kind of been spreading the number one duties around since then, and Ron Hainsey, to his credit, has taken on some of those. He handled some of the tougher matchups for much of the Washington series, he and Brian Dumoulin. So I think he understands his game well. I'm not always sure it fits perfectly into what the Penguins do, because he's maybe not as speedy of a skater and, you know, not as much of a playmaker. But again, he understands his limitations there. He just tries to kind of play it safe and prevent scoring chances. I think it's maybe part of the reason why the Penguins didn't drive possession as well in the first two rounds as many expected. Again, guys like Ron Hainsey, that's just not something that he's necessarily inclined to do or wasn't inclined to do. But if the alternative is bringing in an AHL level guy and again someone who really doesn't have any experience at the NHL level, that's certainly not a better option. So Ron has done what's asked of him, and while he might not be changing anyone's mind and saying, "Oh wow," he's not a Justin Schultz kind of example, I guess you could say, where he comes in and just really goes above and beyond the initial expectations. But he's doing what is asked.
Bill, one event that took place off the ice for the Penguins was Jason Botterill leaving the organization for the Buffalo Sabres. Was he seen as a potential successor for Jim Rutherford, having been in the organization for the last 10 years?
It was a strange situation. Jim Rutherford, when he first came in, indicated that he was only going to be around for a couple of years. And the assumption was that, Jason Botterill was the next in line. Then, of course, the Penguins, really, at first, weren't doing so well. There were some questions about the coaching change, of course, came, and was Jim Rutherford next? So at that point, it seemed, there's a very good chance that Jason Botterill would step in. Then, of course, everything turns around. They win the Cup. They're doing really well again this year. And Jim Rutherford signed his contract extension for three more years last summer. And it's kind of like, well, now they have this abundance of front office new choices. Jason Botterill, Bill Guerin, Mark Recchi has been involved in a lot of the decision-making. So it's kind of a situation where someone was going to leave. And Jason Botterill's name has been mentioned for a while. He was one of the finalists for the Vegas job. So I think it was just him finding an opportunity that he liked and that, the team was willing to go in on him. So I think Buffalo made a good choice. I'm very curious to see what Jason will do, because he got a lot of credit for how the Penguins handled the salary cap, and he's considered a pretty strong eye for talent. So I think it's probably a tough loss for the Penguins. They're not going to say that. They're just going to say they're going to spread the duties around to the remaining front office guys. But it'll be a good question going forward of how much of their creativity with roster construction and again being able to afford stars that they have on the roster. Do they still have people in place who can kind of think that way?
Bill West covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Game one of the Senators and Penguins goes tonight. You can, of course, read Bill's work and his recap on the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we discuss the Washington Capitals. A disappointing Game 7 defeat leads to many questions, such as where do the Capitals go from here? Talk about it next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Obviously, the group's going to change. That's just the financial part of it. I think there's still lots here. I know that people talk about the window closing. The window doesn't close. It just changes a little bit, because the window of, all those pieces that have been here for 6-7 years or whatever, they're going to change. Doesn't mean that you can't add pieces that may even be better.
a disappointing end to the season for the Washington Capitals will likely result in some changes. We'll talk about that coming up next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But we should mention that this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. I can speak from firsthand experience. Got some new jerseys, Dave, for the House of Ashkenazi, the softball team. They were fantastic to deal with over at Keener Jerseys. The jerseys look sharp. They were able to accommodate all of our requests. So check them out, Keener Jerseys, if you want to get some new jerseys for your rec team as well. The Capitals and the Penguins, that was an epic seven-game series that obviously ended in defeat for the Capitals, losing 2-0 on home ice this past Wednesday night. Another disappointing end to the season for the Capitals, the President's Trophy winning Capitals, for the second straight year, can't get past the second round, falling at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now it's leading to questions of where do the Capitals go from here? What's next? Do they need to do something significant? Is there going to be a big shakeup? Do they trade Alex Ovechkin? From your perspective, Ezzy, what do the Capitals need to do? Or is it just a function of running into a very good Pittsburgh Penguins team and they're better off standing pat going forward?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely ridiculous to start talking about trading Alex Ovechkin at this point in his career, guys. You're talking about one of the best goal scorers in the league, right? And Alex Ovechkin, his game certainly has diminished over the years, especially when you talk about his speed, right? But Alex Ovechkin isn't going anywhere. Nicklas Backstrom is not going anywhere. But there are going to be significant changes on this team, Drew. TJ Oshie is an unrestricted free agent. Justin Williams is an unrestricted free agent. Daniel Winnick is an unrestricted free agent. When you're talking about Daniel Winnick, he's a third liner, but he's still an effective player. And then on defense, you've got Carl Alsner. Mm-hmm. You've got Kevin Shattenkirk. So, I mean, TJ Oshie is going to get a lot of money. He's making $4 million now. I wouldn't be surprised if someone gives him $6.5 million a year. TJ Oshie was fantastic. I thought he was the best forward, maybe with the exception of Nicklas Backstrom in that series. Alex Ovechkin certainly struggled at times, and part of that might have to do with the fact that, you know, he took that hit from Nazem Kadri in round one, right? But Carl Alsner and Kevin Shattenkirk, both of them are not coming back. Maybe one of them comes back. Maybe neither of them comes back, right? Because Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik are under contract. Two more years for Orpik, four more years for Niskanen. And then you've got Dmitry Orlov, who's an RFA. And Dmitry Orlov has quietly become a top defenseman for the Washington Capitals. So if you're asking me, I would expect them to re-sign Carl Alsner and Dmitry Orlov, and then Kevin Shattenkirk will test the UFA waters, Drew. But when you're talking about TJ Oshie and Justin Williams, I mean, let's be honest, Justin Williams is 35 years old. He's not getting any younger, right? He's still a very good player. But how many years are you going to give Justin Williams? Maybe two, maybe three? So I would expect Oshie and or Williams to be gone in the offseason. So really the retooling, right? And to talk about, you know, the window for this club, you know, disappearing, I think is ridiculous, at least in the short term. I mean, would any of us be surprised if the Washington Capitals won the President's Trophy or, you know, got 110, 115 points next year? I mean, this is still an excellent team, great goaltending, you know, great depth on forward, great depth on defense. Even a guy like Nate Schmidt has emerged to be a pretty solid third-pairing defenseman, right, guys? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not like Washington's days are numbered, but the question is, are they going to continue just to be a good regular season team that only gets to the second round, or are they going to go all the way? And this team this year was built to go all the way. They pick up Kevin Shattenkirk prior to the trade deadline. I mean, you've got these wily veterans like Justin Williams on your team. I mean, this team on paper was the deepest team in the league, but as you said, they just can't get past the Penguins.
Why can't they get past the Penguins, Dave? They came back from being down 3-1 in the series. I thought that they were going to win Game 7. I thought that the way they dominated Game 6 was a good omen, and then they get to Game 7, and they were the better, you know, to start the game, they certainly were the better team. Then the Penguins score a goal, and it just seems like the Capitals just collapsed. They just had no mental pushback. They had no mental fight. Would you say that they're mentally weak, or something about the Penguins just, you know, plays into their minds?
You know what? I don't know, Drew. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, we're not in their minds, so I can't tell you what they're thinking. But the fact is, I mean, we can't diminish what Pittsburgh is. Pittsburgh is the defending Stanley Cup champion. They're a phenomenal hockey team, and they're a deep hockey team. And they rolled their lines against against Washington, and they came out victorious. And the reality was that you came down from a 3-1 series deficit against the defending Stanley Cup champions, and you managed to tie it and send it to a Game 7. So the fact is, and the truth is, and it's funny how sports works, because the truth is this. If Washington wins that series, mm-hmm. comes back from 3-1 deficit, wins that series, first of all, they're most likely going to the Stanley Cup Finals, would be everyone's expectation. And there's a very good chance that they win the Stanley Cup Finals. And then what's the conversation we're having? How good is this Washington Capitals team? But because they bow out in the second round again, suddenly it's doom and gloom. I'm with Ez. I think it's more about retooling this team, adding some defense. You know, obviously we're going to see some changes on forward because of expiring contracts. But I just think, and the truth is, Braden Holtby didn't play like Braden Holtby that we're used to seeing. I don't think he stole as many points for, you know, or as many games, I should say, for Washington as he potentially could have in the playoffs. So I think, you know, and let's be realistic. I mean, that Kadri hit on Ovechkin, I mean, he wasn't the same player. You know, and sure, he's getting older, but the fact is we all know what Alexander Ovechkin does. And I don't understand, like, the questioning of his leadership. The guy played, he clearly played injured. And sure, you know, some of the goals against in that last game resulted on plays that he was involved in. But again, he was clearly not 100%.
You saw the Instagram post of his leg all bruised and injured after the Kadri hit.
Well, I didn't see the specific picture, but I mean, I watched the game and I knew that clearly he was diminished mm-hmm. as a result of that hit, and he wasn't the same player. And we found out afterwards that he was getting injections intermittently throughout the series to help him deal with the pain. So no, I mean, like, I just think that this is a team that's, you know, you've won back to back presidents trophies and sure, that doesn't mean anything other than the fact that it means you finished with the most points. At the end of the day, everybody wants to win the Stanley Cup. So maybe you retool this team a little bit and you get that opportunity to get into the third round and potentially win the Stanley Cup Finals.
And Dave, it's going to be really interesting to see what the Capitals do prior to the expansion draft, who they protect, right? Because you know that they're going to protect John Carlson and Matt Niskanen and Dmitry Orlov. And then I would think that they'd want to maybe protect a Nate Schmidt. Maybe you expose Brooks Orpik's contract. I think Brooks Orpik making $5.5 million for the next 2 years is a bit of an albatross, Drew. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Brooks Orpik's game. I mean, especially in the playoffs, Brooks Orpik is a solid stay-at-home defenseman, but he's 36 years old. There's a lot of miles on that car right now, right?
Well, when they signed him to that contract, because he came over from the Pittsburgh Penguins a few years ago, everybody said that contract is going to be an albatross towards the end of it, because like you said, he's 36 years old now.
And I wouldn't expect Vegas to take him. Right. If he's exposed, but just interesting to see because
the Capitals would love it if they would take him.
And what are you? How many forwards are you going to protect as well? Right? Which forwards are you going to protect? I should say, like, they don't want to lose a guy like Tom Wilson. They probably don't want to lose a Brett Connolly, who was really good after they acquired him too. So there are going to be moves for Brian McClellan to make, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of those active GMs leading up to the draft because. I think TJ Oshie is going to test the UFA market, and I think Kevin Shattenkirk is going to test the UFA market, right? And those guys are tough to replace.
Sure. Obviously it's disappointing for the Capitals, but do they have to take some solace in the fact that most observers, if you took the score out of it, would say that the Capitals controlled the course of that series for the majority of it?
No, I should say, just by the way, I mean, I could see the Capitals re-signing TJ Oshie. I know I just completely contradicted myself, but the way he played in the playoffs, maybe they do pay him, but you're going to have to pay him probably, what, 6 years, $36 million, something like that?
Well, you look at what a guy like David Backes got last offseason.
Yep. And Oshie deserves it, by the way.
And Oshie's a better player than Backes is. And I would think that he's going to get significant dollars like to that extent.
I just don't know if the Capitals can afford it.
Well, I mean, they have some money coming off the books, like you mentioned. You know, Justin Williams comes off the book. Daniel Winnick comes off the books. Question is, you know, do they have internal replacements that they can get for cheap to come in and sort of fill some of those depth roles? Maybe they look at dealing a guy like Lars Eller, who I don't think is worth the $3.5 million that he's getting paid. I think that's a guy that maybe you'd look to try and, you know, parcel out that money somewhere else. But a guy like Oshie was just so good.
He might have been too good for them.
He outplayed what they can afford.
Exactly. So, I mean, they might have to give him, you know, $6.5 million a year. I think so. I should say, I'm not as I said that, I wasn't as confident that maybe Oshie is going to become a UFA. Certainly Shattenkirk's not coming back. So, no. Needless to say, I mean, the Washington Capitals team is going to look different than it did this past year, right? But to say that this team isn't going to be a playoff team next year is ridiculous.
No, I mean, nobody's. I don't think anybody's saying that. You're right. That's absolutely ridiculous. When we return, Tom Giulitti of NHL.com is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Capitals, more where they go from here, and everything else. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two, up next on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to join the conversation. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/illegalcurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Tom Giulitti. Tom covers the NHL for NHL.com, joining us to talk about the Washington Capitals and their disappointing end to the season. Tom, good morning, and thanks for doing this.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Very well, Tom. Appreciate your time this morning. We were just discussing the Capitals last segment, and you know that Game 7 on Wednesday night, the Capitals come in having battled back from the 3-1 series deficit. You know, they're on home ice. Everything, you know, should be theoretically going their way, as in, you know, my humble opinion. They've been the better of the two teams for the six games that had been played up to that point in time. Yet they come out and they just lay an egg yet again when it matters most. What do you attribute that inability to get over the hump to for the Washington Capitals?
It's a really tough question, you know. It seems there is a mental block there. I thought that they played well early in that game, maybe the first 5 minutes, and it seemed like when things, you know, it really turned when the Penguins got the goal in the second period, and they felt, you know, it just the moment kind of got on them, and I guess that's happened to them before. They kept saying this year that this team is different, and you wanted to believe them, but you have to, you know, it has to be shown on the ice, and they haven't shown it yet. And that's really the question that Brian McClellan, the general manager, and Barry Trotz have to kind of try to figure that out, is what is missing from this team that they can't get over this hump mentally. It really is a tough thing for them. They didn't respond well when the third period, if you watch it. I think you also have to give credit to the Penguins, because they really played well. I thought that was their best game of the series, and for what I had seen them play in the playoffs this year, that was their best game. And you know, they really, in the third period in particular, they really frustrated them. They really clogged up the neutral zone. The Capitals couldn't even get into the offensive zone and get set up, even after they pulled the goaltender. So it was a definitely frustrating night for the Capitals. And, you know, being at their breakup day yesterday, it was really not a lot of answers, just a lot of, you know, something's got to change.
Tom, the Capitals have several pending UFAs, TJ Oshie being one of them. Can the Capitals afford to lose him based on the way he played in the first two rounds of the playoffs?
He's an important player, and of the guys that are their potential UFAs, he's probably their number one priority as far as the guy they'd like to bring back the most. The question is whether they can find the cap space. They got to give some raises to guys like Kuznetsov and Burakovsky, and even Orlov, who really played well for them this year, and even Nate Schmidt, who kind of took a big step forward, I thought, with his play in the playoffs. So those are things they're going to have to figure out. Maybe Brian McClellan has to make some other moves to make sure he keeps TJ Oshie, because he's really been a good fit here, and it really seems like he wants to stay. So it really would be a shame if he wasn't here next year, but sometimes that's the way the business is.
So, Tom, would you say that for next season you expect some significant changes, or do you think there'll just be some minor tweaks?
That's a tough question. I think they need to do something to kind of break things up here. I don't know what it could be, but it's hard to make in today's day with the salary cap to really make a seismic change to the organization. And a lot of times, you know, you look at teams and they couldn't get over the hump, and they're like, oh, we need to change something. And then they do, and they go from being a team that's always good every year but can't get over the hump to a team that's not even a playoff team. and because it's hard to break it down and build it back up again. So that's really it's I think they're in a tough spot. Like no one's satisfied with the Capitals being a team that falls out in the second round every year. But the risk of ripping it up is what do you end up being afterwards? And they do have some young players on the way, but I don't know that if they just went all young that they would be a playoff team next year. And then you have to get the right guys in to refit it. So I think this is a really important transition summer for them as far as what direction Brian McClellan and ownership choose to take.
Tom Giulitti is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Tom's with NHL.com. We're discussing the Washington Capitals and their second round defeat at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins and where the Capitals go from here. Tom, you know, it was palpable in some of the tweets and in your writing yesterday at locker room cleanout day for the Capitals just how significant the disappointment was. You know, how would you describe the difference between this year and their playoff defeat and the disappointment and last year and the disappointment?
Well, I think last year you could have said, as disappointing as it was, and they had their chance to win that series against Pittsburgh last year, but the Penguins were a better team in terms of they were playing really well. They were at full strength. They had Letang. They were a good team. They played really well, and they went on to win the Cup and showed how good they were. I think if what really made it tough on the Capitals, and it should be on them, is that they feel this is really a wasted opportunity for them. Penguins were missing Letang. You know, Crosby missed a game with a concussion, and it took him maybe a little bit to get back to being himself. When he did come back, there were, you know, the Daly was out, and all these other players, Murray's out, and they couldn't beat Fleury. I mean, this was a situation where the Capitals were a team with what they have that were capable of winning that series, and they didn't. So I think that really stung more. On top of that, they knew, as we've mentioned, that, you know, some changes are going to come just because of the salary cap and free agency. So this was the end of a window for them with this group, and they missed an opportunity. So you could really tell that it hurt them, and it was understandable that it did, because they definitely missed an opportunity, and I thought, in that series.
Tom, you mentioned Evgeny Kuznetsov earlier. He's a pending RFA, and as you mentioned, he's due for a raise, as is Andrei Burakovsky. Was there any player that improved his stock more in the playoffs than Evgeny Kuznetsov? Because he really struggled last year for the Capitals. He had 77 points during the regular season, but he only had 2 points in 12 playoff games last year.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy who took a step with his play in the playoffs this year. Last year he disappeared, and I don't know if I really put a finger on what went wrong there. It might have been a little bit mental for him, and that there were bigger expectations on him after he had such a good regular season. But I think this year he just decided to go out and play and have fun, and you could tell in his attitude. Yesterday he was disappointed like everybody else that they lost, but he also was kind of like, I love playing hockey and it's fun. Why, you know, so that was still, you could still see that in him, and I think that approach helped him where maybe some other guys didn't have that approach, and that allowed the pressure to get to them and not play at their best. And I think him just taking that fun approach, you know, that was, I think, kind of what Barry Trotz is talking about. You have to have joy in your game. And he was, if you looked at the guys that played for them in the playoffs, he was a guy who definitely had the joy, and it helped him. And, you know, like you said, it was a step forward for him. I think we saw that him, and if 2 years ago, he had a pretty good playoffs for them. And so that was why last year was an even bigger disappointment. So to see him back, I think he's right now, they're probably their best offensive player, him and Nick Backstrom. So he's a guy you build around, definitely.
Tom, in his final blog post after the Game 7 loss, Capitals owner Ted Leonsis wrote about the moves they've made this year, and he referenced them as both obvious and discreet. Do you have any indication as to what those discreet moves were?
Yeah, I don't. I read that too, and I'm not quite sure. I know they've tried to do some things as far as, you know, mentally getting over the hump and some team building exercises and things like that. So I'm not sure if that was what it meant, but they've definitely tried a lot of different things to try to get over this hump, and it hasn't worked. I don't know what those discreet things that he was speaking about.
Tom, you covered the Capitals-Penguins series in its entirety. Now that you've seen the Penguins dispatch the Capitals in 7 games, do the Senators have any chance in round 3?
I think the Senators have a chance. I picked the Penguins to win the series, but I do think the Senators have a chance. And the biggest reason is Erik Karlsson, as well as he played. And their goaltending, if Craig Anderson plays the way he did in Game 6 against the Rangers, if that's the way he's going to be the game he puts out there every night, I think that gives them a chance. I think the Penguins, as they're constituted right now without Letang and some of their injuries, are beatable, but I don't know if any of the teams left are going to beat them, as strange as that sounds. Like, there's definitely success. The Capitals were the team that should have beat, you know, or had the best chance to beat them, and now if they won that series, I don't know how they're going to lose. Anyone else is going to beat them, other than you look at the freight train that is the Predators on the other side and wonder if this might be their year of destiny. But we'll see if they both get to the final first. But like you said, I think it's going to be a big challenge for the Senators. They're an underdog in this series, but they did a pretty good job against the Rangers. So I'll be interested to see how it goes early in the series against the Penguins, if they can take a game in Pittsburgh and maybe gain some confidence there.
Tom, we'll let you go on this last question. Speaking to reporters yesterday at the locker room cleanout day, Carl Alsner said that, quote, this is a pretty good window to win the Stanley Cup that we had here, and unfortunately it's not there anymore. Do you think Alsner meant that the Caps window is closed, or the Caps window as currently constructed with this current roster is closed?
It's with the current roster, it's definitely closed. I'm not sure if it can be reopened again. We've seen some teams 2 years ago, look at the Penguins. They lost, I think, in 5 games to the Rangers in the first round, and they looked like they were just, their window was almost gone. And, you know, some retooling on the fly, some really good moves by Jim Rutherford kind of got them back at it. You know, the Rangers last year looked like they were dead, and some moves that they made, I thought, got rejuvenated them. They still have a window that's closing there, but maybe the Capitals can do something similar as far as just retooling in the fly, getting some good younger guys in there or the right other pieces in there, and kind of make one more run at it with this group with Ovechkin and Backstrom. That's the question, I guess, for that Brian McClellan's going to have to figure out the best way to answer it in the coming weeks.
Tom Giulitti is with NHL.com. Tom, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us to discuss the Washington Capitals.
Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Tom. When we come back, the Winnipeg Jets, many of their rivals have solved their goaltending problem. It's all crickets here in Peg City. Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thanks to Tom Giulitti. Big thanks to Bill West for joining us. In case you missed either of those interviews or any of the show in its entirety, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. Also available on your favorite podcast system.
Format. Anything.
Format. Whatever
you
want.
You got what do we have now?
Android, Apple, whatever you want.
Google Play.
Yeah, Google Play. Anything under the sun, you can download the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Should mention that this segment brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Dallas Stars, they acquired Ben Bishop this past week from the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for a 4th-round pick. Then they go out and they sign Ben Bishop to a 6-year, $29.5 million contract, average annual value of $4.916 million. Obviously, the Dallas Stars investing heavily in Ben Bishop to finally solve their goaltending problem. Two questions for you, gentlemen. One, is that a good signing for the Dallas Stars? Do you like that signing? Two, all quiet on the Winnipeg Jets front. How concerning is that to you?
Let's tackle number one first, Drew.
Okay.
I like the signing, but I don't like the amount of years that he was given. I like that contract if it's a 3-year contract, but 6 years is a lot of years for a goaltender who's 30 years old. And, you know, Ben Bishop, we know, wanted a long-term contract with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he wanted $6 million a year, and that was the reason they traded him. They couldn't fit that under the contract, the salary cap, and they decided that Andrei Vasilevsky was the heir apparent to the goalie throne in Tampa Bay, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about Ben Bishop, I mean, this is a 2-time Vezina Trophy finalist. He's an excellent goaltender, and Dallas needed a number one goaltender, and Antti Niemi is going to be bought out and exposed in the expansion draft. Actually, no, he won't be exposed because they're going to expose Kari Lehtinen in the expansion draft. They'll protect Ben Bishop, but Antti Niemi is not coming back. So they're going with Ben Bishop and Kari Lehtinen, and I like that tandem a lot better than the Antti Niemi-Kari Lehtinen tandem. So I like the signing, but again, once you get into those final years of the contract, is he going to be as good, right? We know that, you know, as goaltenders get into their mid-30s, they start to decline a little bit. You've seen it with Henrik Lundqvist. And don't get me wrong, Henrik Lundqvist is still an excellent goaltender, but let's be honest, Craig Anderson outplayed him in the second round, right? So Dallas needed to address the goaltending situation. Their goaltend was arguably the worst in the entire league last year, and they needed to address it. And again, you know, when you talk about the Winnipeg Jets, I never thought that Ben Bishop was going to end up in Winnipeg, and that's because I don't think that the Jets want to sign a goaltender to a long-term contract. I think they're looking to bring in a guy for maybe 2 or 3 years, Dave, right? So we don't know who that's going to be right now. We know that Andre Pavlik is coming back. That's about all we know.
No, isn't coming back.
Sorry, that's what I meant to say. Okay. So
I think you just gave, you gave the audience some heart palpitations there for a minute.
Isn't coming back. Yeah. I thought I said that. But
you choked on your words a bit, but that's
certainly
okay.
The Jets need to upgrade the goaltender position, right? So, I mean, we've heard the names that have been thrown out there, and I don't know if it's going to be Brian Elliott. I have no idea who it's going to be. But the Jets are going to acquire a goaltender. I would be pretty safe in saying that that is going to happen, and that's because, I mean, the tandem of Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson just didn't work out this past year, right? They need a veteran to push Connor Hellebuck. I believe Connor Hellebuck, by the way, is the future number one goaltender or current number one goaltender and will do a good job. I just think he needs a veteran presence there. So again, I mean, you mentioned that the Jets have been quiet on the goalie front, but I didn't really expect them to do anything about it until free agency. We've said all along that it's more likely the Jets will acquire a goaltender in free agency as opposed to a trade.
Yeah, I'm not terribly surprised. I didn't think the Jets were in on the Ben Bishop sweepstakes anyways. I think that Dallas, you know, for a team like Dallas that has the weapons that it does, and to not qualify for the playoffs this year was a huge disappointment, obviously. And they needed to do something with their goaltending, which is a weakness that everybody's been addressing for them for a number of years as their Achilles heel for that team. So perhaps they've done that. I mean, Bishop obviously was injured this year, only played 39 games, I think, between the Lightning and the Kings. So, you know, the Dallas has to hope that he's going to be healthy, but, you know, he's 30 years old, a six-year deal. I'm with Ez. Like, you know, if you want to give him big money for a short period of time, that was one thing, but clearly Dallas doesn't feel like they have a lot in the goalie pipeline, and I don't know what their, the Texas Stars affiliate in terms of their goaltending, if they have any top prospects. I don't believe they do. So perhaps this makes sense, provided Bishop can stay healthy. But again, I'm with Ez. I believe that Connor Hellebuck, who picked up a big win today over in the World Championship, had an assist included with that win. But
he's an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah, he's an offensive. He's the next Pekka Rene. But I really think that they're just going to bring in a veteran goalie to kind of push him, help mentor him a little bit. You know, someone who can handle the burden. And the reality is, if you know, you have someone who plays 20, 30 games, whatever it ends up being, and gets enough wins. I mean, think about it. What did the Jets not get from Michael Hutchinson this year until the end when it didn't matter? They got four wins from him in the first, 70 games of the season, and in the last 10, they got five. So,
and I realize, Dave, a lot of Jets fans see the Carolina Hurricanes trading for Scott Darling, signing him, and they see the Dallas Stars trading for Ben Bishop and signing him, and they say, well, why didn't the Jets go out and acquire those two goaltenders? Well, I mean, was that even an option, right? And for the Jets, I mean, whether that is a Brian Elliott or that's a Steve Mason or possibly a Jonathan Bernier, one of those goaltenders, I think that's kind of the class of goaltender we're talking about. Those goaltenders are an upgrade on Michael Hutchinson, and that's no disrespect to Michael Hutchinson. I really like Michael Hutchinson. I think he's a great guy in the dressing room, and I think he's a guy that still has a future in the NHL as a backup goaltender. Maybe it's in the American Hockey League, but when you're talking about a guy like Brian Elliott, I realize people like to say, well, he was awful in the first round, and he was awful at times for the Calgary Flames. He was also a goalie that got the St. Louis Blues to the Western Conference Final last year, right? So he's a guy that's been a number one goaltender in this league, and the same goes for a guy like Steve Mason. I'm not saying that Steve Mason is Martin Brodeur or Henrik Lundqvist. He's not a top five goalie in the NHL, but he is an upgrade over Michael Hutchinson. So I when you're talking about who the Jets might acquire, I think that's kind of the cast of characters that you're looking at, a guy like a Brian Elliott or a guy like a Steve Mason.
Let me throw this name at you. A lot of talk coming out of Detroit where they have a couple of goaltenders in, under contract, both Jimmy Howard and Peter Mrazek. Howard, of course, being the veteran goaltender of the two. A lot of talk that one of those two guys might be available via a trade. Howard only under contract for another two seasons after this one. He's, you know, cap hit's pretty significant, up at $5.2 million, but he would certainly fit the bill of that veteran goaltender, a short-term sort of not stopgap solution, but a guy who can battle Connor Hellebuck. Also, an American goaltender might be able to serve as a mentor for a young American goaltender in Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, and the Detroit Red Wings didn't have a very good season this year, but you know, Jimmy Howard still put up a .927 save percentage on a bad Red Wings team, right? Yeah. And you know,
2.10 goals against average.
Right. So I mean, sure, Jimmy Howard is in that conversation as well with Steve Mason and Brian Elliott as well, Drew. I mean, I realize, you know, Jimmy Howard's not a guy that's going to excite a lot of Jets fans out there. But again, you talk about, you know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. That's the type of goaltender the Jets are looking for. And I realize Marc-Andre Fleury is that sexy name that's out there. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you talk about Marc-Andre Fleury, the Calgary Flames, I think, are in the conversation for Marc-Andre Fleury. I think they're probably the front runner right now. So I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury is really an option for the Jets. I'm not saying that Kevin Cheveldayoff maybe isn't making a phone call to Jim Rutherford, but I just don't think that that necessarily is going to happen. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be great. Marc-Andre Fleury is a great goaltender, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Worth noting, Jimmy Howard does have a modified no trade clause. So, I'm not sure, of course, if the Jets are on that or if he'd be willing to waive it. But that's something just, you know, food for thought in the interest of fairness. He does have a modified no trade clause.
The one thing is worth pointing out is that, you know, Connor Hellebuck has now hit the 150 professional hockey games, which Steve Alliquette, you know, often talks about, former Rangers goalie. About how, you know, a prospect really isn't ready kind of to assume the mantle of a full-time kind of starter until he's played at least 150 professional hockey games. And I believe now through, a couple of seasons in the AHL and now in the NHL, Connor Hellebuck is around 158, 160 games professional. So perhaps he's ready to kind of take it to the next level. And, you know, it'll be a big summer. I mean, that's the one thing we're also not factoring in. You know, we're talking about what kind of player the Jets are going to bring in to kind of help push Connor Hellebuck. And will it be a real veteran, or will it be another sort of young-ish goalie? Not like as young as he is, but, you know, in that sort of vein.
Scott Darling looking for his opportunities.
Sure, exactly. So, it'll be interesting to see. But I think that, you know, Connor Hellebuck, if he kind of gets back to kind of just erases the idea, because, like, you know, we just saw Connor Hellebuck almost act like he was impervious and like he was infallible. And that to me was a weakness, because, you know, nobody is infallible and you're going to make mistakes and nothing is. And, you know, Paul Maurice talked about this a lot last year about how his errors are more glaring than Josh Morrissey's errors or, you know, Mark Scheifele's errors or Patrick Laine's errors, simply because
it
ends up with a puck in the net. And one thing that I noticed with Connor Hellebuck is that he wouldn't accept that, you know, he could make mistakes. And I think that he felt so much pressure because of the way he was kind of thrust into that position that it just got to him last season. So I think now having another kind of a full now NHL season under his belt really should do wonders for his development. And if he has a productive summer, I mean, realistically, Jets fans can kind of see what we saw when I watched him play for the Manitoba Moose, was a very confident young man who has tremendous ability and really can assume the mantle of a starting goaltender in the NHL.
And Dave, another goaltender to throw out there is Yaroslav Halak, who's got 1 year left on his contract. We know that he's not going to be the number one goaltender for New York next year. So he's another guy who might be an answer for the Jets as their second goaltender behind Connor Hellebuck.
Let me ask you guys this. With the expansion draft and the Jets, obviously the ability to only protect one goaltender, do you expect the Jets to trade or acquire a goaltender prior to that expansion draft? Because then they would likely, you know, acquire a goalie and have to expose him, because I don't see them exposing Connor Hellebuck under any situation. So do you think that this is something that's going to resolve itself after the expansion draft and maybe either before free agency or before the NHL draft?
Yeah, I think they're going to acquire a goaltender after the expansion draft. And I've said all along, I think it's going to happen in free agency. I might be wrong about that. Maybe the Jets swing a deal prior to the NHL draft or at the NHL draft. But when you look at some of the goaltenders that are available, Yaroslav Halak obviously has to be acquired via trade, Drew, and so does Jimmy Howard.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking
about guys like Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right, Marc-Andre Fleury. I've never thought that he's an option for the Jets.
Right.
Because I think there are other teams. Philadelphia is also in the conversation. Florida is another team. Roberto Luongo's health is uncertain. Maybe Florida, you know, goes after Marc-Andre Fleury.
They have James Reimer. They signed him to a big 5-year contract that last offseason to be their goaltender of the future.
I don't know if I'd call him the goaltender of the future, Drew.
Well,
but
they're paying him a lot of money. They're paying Reimer $3.4 million. They're not paying him to be a backup, I wouldn't think.
Well, this year he was.
I know, but why are you paying him $3.4 million then? I don't quite understand
that. Well, if James Reimer is your number one goaltender, you're in trouble.
Well, then they're overpaying for a backup goaltender. So it's, damned if you do, damned if you don't there in Florida. But your point is well taken.
And that's nothing against James Reimer. I just think he's better suited in a backup role.
It'll be interesting. The Jets fans are certainly eager to see a new goaltender come to Winnipeg to try and solidify what has been a problem area for going on 6 years now. Dave, quickly, before Josh Cooper joins us.
Well, I was going to say, you can go to the website. We have a link to the audio for an interview Jamie McLennan did on the Big Show yesterday, I think, talking about how the Jets may have dodged a bullet by not getting Darling or Ben Bishop. So if you're interested in the former NHL goaltender's position on that, go to illegalcurve.com.
There you have it. Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy joins us next to talk about the Western Conference Finals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.